Welcome back to another edition of Talk Nerdy to Me. I have a very special guest with us today. This guy, I'm looking at his IMDb page, and it's so, I think at the bottom he says, and so on and so on. There's so much stuff. You guys probably know him most from My Hero Academia, where he plays Shota Ozawa, Eraserhead. I would like to welcome Christopher Waycamp. How you doing, Christopher?
Hey, good to be here.
So, like I said, Shota, and we talked a little bit earlier, is a fan favorite. He's one of your favorites also, you said.
He is.
Let's start way back with wee little Christopher growing up. When did you realize that you wanted to be a voice actor?
Well, I didn't really know I wanted to be a voice actor when I was a kid. You know, I was a big fan of cartoons, kind of a 90s kid. I was watching everything. But one of the shows that really stood out to me when I was a kid was Voltron. And then this other show that that was on reruns at that time, which was called Star Blazers. And it really stood out to me because they were just so different looking than the other cartoons. I really didn't know, you know, the word anime at that time, but they stuck out to me. Something about the style really stuck out, and they stuck with me for a long time. So, you know, fast forward a little bit, and I was very interested in theater, very, very outspoken, outgoing, exuberant kid, sometimes causing a lot of problems in class because of that. But the teachers channeled that. And so I ended up getting into a theater program very early. I did my first play in kindergarten. And then from there, you know, I just kind of stuck with it. And I did theater all the way through middle school and high school. Went to college on a theater degree and then changed it over to a media arts degree with a focus on radio, television, and film, and voiceover as well. So, you know, it was really college where I think I decided, hey, I want to get trained up more in, you know, the media arts side of performance. You know, at that time, I felt like I had done so much theater and I wanted to sort of branch out. I thought I was going to be a documentary filmmaker, actually. And then, you know, by the time I graduated college, I sort of had it in my head that I wanted to pursue some form of voice acting. I didn't really know what. And yeah, I mean, that sort of led to 2010, 2011, where I did my first audition for Funimation. And ever since then, I've been just getting more and more roles and hopefully doing these characters justice.
Voice acting is just as hard as acting in front of the camera. A lot of people don't realize. Can you walk us through a typical day in the studio for voice acting?
Sure. I'm actually talking to you right now from my home studio. I live just outside of Dallas and in one of the suburbs here outside of Dallas. And so I've got a home studio here where I record auditions. I'm actually in the process of going through a bunch of auditions that my agent sent me this morning and getting those submitted. And then this evening, I have sessions up at Funimation. So once I get done with my auditions today, then I'll be driving over to the studio to record for a couple shows, three shows today, I think. And that'll take me into the late evening. I think I'm going till 10 o'clock tonight. So, you know, each day is mostly auditioning. That's sort of the life of a voice actor is a lot of auditioning. I'm in Dallas, so, you know, I have good representation here in town, but I often will also get audition sides from outside of Dallas. You know, the internet, the amazing ability of the internet to kind of make it so you can work from anywhere in the voiceover industry. So that's, I don't know, that's kind of a typical day. Some days, you know, it's are busier than others. It just really depends. That's any job, I suppose. But yeah, that's what it looks like today.
Do you prefer to play a hero or a villain?
You know, it depends on the show. Like, for example, I was the lead in a show called Space Battleship Yamato 2199. It was a reboot of the original Star Blazers or Space Battleship Yamato from the 70s and 80s that Funimation produced, began producing, I guess, a couple years ago now. And I was the main protagonist, the voice of Kodai in that show, and I wouldn't have had it any other way because I love the character arc of Kodai. He starts off really sort of young and naive in that sort of typical trope, but then very quickly is thrust into a lot of responsibility way before he's ready. And he makes some mistakes. He has to learn from them very quickly. He's not necessarily your typical protagonist in that way, I suppose. And so he was really a joy to play. I got to voice him through 2199 and the sequel series, 2202. But then, you know, Borderlands 3 came out last year, and I got a chance to be one of the main bad guys in that show, a character named Katagawa Jr., who's a Maliwan executive. And I sort of think of him as like an alpha sociopath, if you will. He's just ruthless, bloodthirsty. He doesn't have any of the emotional machinery inside of a normal human being. But you know, the tone of his characters is actually very comedic. It's very funny. And we got to go a lot of different directions with him. So, you know, it sort of depends on, I think it depends on the context, it depends on the show. And certainly there's good things about both.
Okay. Yeah. You segued there to the video game world. How close is video game voice acting to, you know, anime series voice acting?
Well, there's certainly some overlap. I mean, in terms of skill set, and you know, what you're going to be doing, you're still sort of, you know, finding the character elements, creating a character. You know, the biggest difference between, let's say, those two particular examples is that when I come into the studio and I'm dubbing something, yeah, much of it's, you know, it's already laid down. So there's already a Japanese seiyu that has performed the role. In the case of Aizawa from My Hero Academia, it's Juichi Suabe, who's, you know, an amazing seiyu. I tend to think of him as kind of the Clint Eastwood of Japanese anime. He's just got such a great voice and great gravel and texture to his voice and such a good stoic performance. So, you know, when I go in to perform Aizawa, I'm really pulling a lot from his performance. We want to try to stay as faithful and close to the Japanese as we possibly can while still producing something that's very palatable to, you know, a Western audience that doesn't, you know, leave them going, what was that? Because there are a lot of cultural differences and language differences as well. So you're sort of walking into the booth with those, you know, I want to say restrictions, I suppose, because we have to fit the words to the mouth flaps. We have to make sure that the tone is very close to the original. You know, whereas when I went into Gearbox to record for Katagawa Jr., the sky's the limit. I mean, to a certain degree, we've got obviously a director there and writers there that are that have a vision for the character. But as far as my performance, I'm really walking into the booth and just letting it rip. And some things will fit and some things won't. And it's a very collaborative process. And, you know, that's just really freeing. It's a different kind of fun, I suppose, because we really got to just chew up the scenery and go crazy. So yeah, it's different. There's, you know, there's good things about both, but as far as similarities, I mean, you still have to be an actor for both. You know, the question I get the most is, how do I become a voice actor? And really, you need to start by being an actor, and then specialize from there kind of into voice acting.
A lot of people don't realize that we had games before video games. I've read that you are a big RPG fan.
Yes.
So much so that you have started your own podcast centered around Dungeons and Dragons, Dungeon Booth. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I grew up playing tabletop games and you know, Dungeons and Dragons was kind of my first exposure to improv. I had really never trained in improv, but in high school, I got a chance to dig into tabletop role-playing games. And it's really, you know, when you're taking on that character and you're reacting in the moment, that's improv. You're trying to decide what the character will do and saying the character's lines. And I didn't really know it, but it was pretty good training. But then also it's just super fun. If you haven't played before, it's fantastic. It's a great excuse for people from our generation and younger to get together and put their phones down and actually be face to face and have, you know, something they can do together that's fun. And like the generation that came before us kind of used to have like, you know, spades night or something. All the parents from the neighborhood would get together and they'd play cards once a month or something. And that, you know, it's kind of gone away. And in some ways, I feel like this resurgence of Dungeons and Dragons, you know, thanks to Critical Role and some of the other really big shows, has made it so that this outlet is coming back. It's roaring back now. So that's really cool. And, you know, gosh, there's just so many good, talented voice actors in the Dallas area that that I had this dream that wouldn't it be cool if we could kind of do the same thing that Critical Role is doing, but in our own small way. And the biggest difference is that I change out my cast for every game. Every game is a one shot, which means, you know, it's not a recurring campaign. So we have different characters. We have different opportunities for interaction, and lots of crazy stuff happens. We did our first live game, which was last August at Game Fest in Dallas, Anime Fest, Game Fest. It was just the best. It was just the most fun. It was so great. And I'm really looking forward to doing it again in 2020. We actually have a new version of the podcast coming out. We're switching to video. And so we're going to be releasing on Patreon first, and then we're moving to weekly releases on YouTube of the episodes. So we're going from audio only to video. That's going to be really cool. And we'll still release things on the podcast as well. So yeah, the Dungeon Booth, I'm very excited, very pumped for 2020.
And they should be able to find this just by Googling Dungeon Booth, correct?
Yeah, if you just look up thedungeonbooth.com, you can go to the website, or it's on iTunes, it's on Google Play. Those would be the two main areas where I guess you could get the podcast.
You do a lot of con appearances also. How weird is it to see people cosplaying the characters that you've brought to life?
It's the best. I mean, it's not, you know, I, even from the start, I'm pretty new to the con scene. I really started in 2018. I went to 2 conventions, and then last year I went to 17. so big wow. Ramp up very quickly. But you know, that speaks to the popularity of My Hero Academia and the opportunities that that has provided. And I'm super grateful for any time I get to go to town and spend some time with fans. You know, as a voice actor, we spend a lot of time just sitting alone in a booth, kind of like what I'm doing today. And we record our parts and then we sort of go off into our lives. And there's really not a whole lot of opportunities to talk to people about the shows and the work that we do. Just in normal life. And but when you go to a con, it's just finally you get to interact with people who understand, who many times, you know, like with the cosplayers who cosplay Aizawa, they usually know more about the character than I do. They can come up with incredible deep cuts from, you know, areas of the fandom that I'm not aware of. And it's always just so gratifying to see people in Aizawa cosplay. Cosplay is about sacrifice, and sometimes you see people, I've seen people, you know, in the last year with just the most jaw-dropping Aizawa cosplay, like you know, him in full erasure mode. He's using his quirk, his hair is standing straight up. Somehow they've made it so that his scarf is floating around his head or over his head. You know, it just blows me away, and it's the best feeling. So I really look forward to seeing what folks are going to come up with for the con in El Paso.
Yeah, it is a real high form of flattery to see that they have bonded to your character so much, so that they've taken all the time to do these costumes. So,
and oftentimes in, you know, terrible conditions. You know, I went to Akon in Dallas this last year. It was brutally hot. You know, the time of year. It was August. Texas weather, and people were wearing wigs and, you know, these wonderful, you know, but horrible leather outfits and just suffering. You know, it's like, you gotta have passion. You gotta have a lot of passion to suffer through that.
Yeah, very true. They love their characters.
Yeah.
Since we're on the topic of My Hero Academia, all those characters go to the UA Academy. Have we ever seen what that actually stands for?
Like, do you mean the U and the A?
Yeah.
That's a good question. UA. Yeah, we should. Why does that seem like I know that? Hold on. When in doubt, there's Google.
Google answers all.
UAI. Yeah,
I have seen where they've said that if you switch the letters around, it's AU, which is Japanese for hero. I just wanted to verify. I wanted to see if I could get that verification from you, but I guess they haven't let you guys know either.
I don't know. That's a good question that I've really never asked myself. but you bring up a good point. I feel like we should know that. UA high. So I'm also, you know, and actors have different sort of processes for this and techniques, but I do not read the manga. This goes back to, I sort of picked this practice up from back in 2014 when I got my first lead role, and it was in a show called Laughing Under the Clouds. And very early on in that show, something very, very dramatic happens to my character. And I didn't know that it was coming because I hadn't read any of the manga. Mm. And I feel like the performance that I gave in the booth was, you know, included those feelings of surprise, of shock, of sadness, and really informed my performance. I was able to use it because it was just so visceral. I mean, it was happening right then. I was learning about what was happening. And so I do my best, you know, ever since then to sort of not know what's coming. Now, that's oftentimes very difficult because I'm very active on social media. There's so many spoilers online. Definitely follow me at ChrisWeekamp. And then what would it be on Instagram? I think it's just C Weekamp, at C Weekamp. But yeah, Chris Weekamp on Twitter. And, you know, I do my best to just kind of steer clear of spoilers. Sometimes it's just unavoidable. There's just so many spoilers online that it can become sort of impossible to avoid them.
Can we talk a little bit about Marygrove Forest?
Oh yes, of course. Yeah. This was, Marygrove Forest was a series of children's audio stories that I created right around the same time that my, my twins were born. That was back in, 2011, I think. And my kids were born in 2010. I think I released Marygrove Forest back in 2011. And it was a series of audio stories that I created really for them. And but you know, once I started spending some time on it and realizing how passionate I was about it, I decided to go ahead and put them online. And so for 2 or 3 years there, I released a series of children's audio stories that is sort of, it's populated by these anthropomorphic animals who live in Marygrove Forest together. And they, you know, they have fun, funny stuff happens. And, but at the end, they sort of always have some sort of, you know, hopefully not hitting you over the head with a hammer kind of lesson. And some of the stories that I was doing, I realized I was sort of doing them in part because I wasn't sure about some things. I was sort of a new father and I was trying to figure out, you know, what, how did I feel about things like screen time and, kindness, honesty, what are ways to instill those values and what are examples of those values in real life? And, so then also I was, you know, I really enjoyed voicing all the characters. I did all the characters myself. I did all the production of the sound effects and the music and all that stuff. So, it was really a labor of love, and yeah, that's Marygrove Forest.
Where can people find this to listen to themselves?
I think it's still available on parentswho.com. That's parentswho.com. And my plan for it for the future is to sort of meld it into the dungeon booth and just at least make it available there for people who wanted to download it.
If you could be attached to any other licensed TV, movies, whatever, besides what you've already done, what would you pick?
I grew up, I was a Nintendo kid, you know, original Nintendo and Super Nintendo. I was just, couldn't get enough of it. And still to this day, my kids have a Nintendo Switch and I have a Nintendo Switch. because especially when I go on the road, I love anytime there's a layover or, just some dead time, I can pull out my Switch and play. I love Nintendo as a company. I think they're just fantastic. They've, you know, they made a commitment a long, long time ago to really care about making games fun. And graphics, you know, that's nice. Trends that come and go, that's nice. But at the end of the day, their games are just fun. They're just super duper fun. So I would, you know, I grew up with Mario and Zelda and Metroid and all that stuff. I would love someday to get a chance to lend my voice to a Nintendo property. That would be a big one.
All right, Nintendo, you heard it right there.
That's right. Nintendo, if you're listening.
Do you have anything upcoming you can talk about or that you want to plug besides what we already know about?
Yeah. Well, there's a new show that has debuted. I can't say a lot about it because the Japanese licensor has held us under a pretty strict NDA, mostly because it's sort of a mystery show. And so it makes perfect sense. They would not want details to leak out about it. It's called Id Invaded. And it's on Funimation right now. I believe it's also subbed. I believe it's subbed and dubbed on Funimation right now. You can get that obviously on the Funimation Now app, or you can stream it on the website, the Funimation website. And the lead is played by Josh Greeley, who's fantastic voice actor. He's Tokoyami in My Hero Academia as well, Armin Arlett in Attack on Titan, on and on and on. He's just fantastic. I love everything he does. I play sort of a more stoic counterpart to him, and I can't really reveal a lot about him, but his name is Momoki. And I would say, you know, we're on episode, let's see, I think episode 3 just released this last weekend, so it's still pretty early on. If you jump into it now, you're not far behind. It wouldn't take you long to sort of get caught up. And it's a sort of a cyberpunk sci-fi mystery. And I honestly, I don't even know what's going on. There's so many unanswered questions for me right now about, you know, specifically character motivation. But it drew me in very quickly. I love sci-fi. I love cyberpunk. That's right in my wheelhouse. So if it's in yours, you should definitely check it out. And then as far as appearances go, I'm going to be staying pretty close to home next month. I'm going to be appearing at Plus Ultra Expo in Plano, Texas. So for anybody who's around town or coming into town, hopefully I'll get a chance to see you then. And beyond that, man, I'm excited to come out to El Paso.
And I know everybody's excited to have you out here.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was telling you earlier, this is going to be my first trip out that way. I've lived in Texas pretty much all my life. I moved here when I was 4. But I just haven't made it out that far. Texas is more like a country than a state. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great to meet everybody.
I saved the hard-hitting journalist question here for the end. This one is probably going to take a little bit of thought for you.
Okay.
So are you ready for this question?
Yeah, let me put on my thinking cap here. I'm ready.
Okay. Cake or pie?
Ooh, wow. Gosh, that is a hard question. Because I would never expect to go to a birthday party and blow out candles on a birthday pie of somebody else's. But I will tell you that for my own birthday, my wife does make me a homemade apple pie, and we put candles in my apple pie and I blow out candles in my apple pie. So I'm not going to say no to cake. I mean, let's be honest. I'm going to eat cake because it's good. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think I'm more of a pie guy.
So we have team pie. And yeah, it sounds like apple is probably your favorite.
If I have to choose, I would choose team pie. And yeah, I love any fruit pie, really. But apple pie is just so good.
Yeah, that question always does pose a quandary for people. So...
Yeah, you were right. I mean, my brain is steaming right now.
Yeah, and you may switch teams later. Who knows?
That's right. As we change and grow, you know, I mean, there could be opportunities in the future.
Let's not close that door completely.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. I wanted to thank you for taking time out of your busy day. I know you're in your home studio now, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Just wanted to, again, thank you for coming on Talk Nerdy to Me.
Hey, of course, Troy. Am I going to get to meet you in person in El Paso as well?
Probably more than you want to.
Okay.
I'm very hands-on at the con, so I will be around a lot.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'll look forward to meeting you then. But hey, yeah, thanks for the time. And for anybody listening to this, I look forward to meeting you in person soon.
All right. That was Christopher Wakecamp, guys. Thank you. Get nerdy with me. Tell me what game that you get on. Is it COD or EVE? What kind of class do you play, girl? In an RPG.